Blog Talk Radio.
Called out to me and said, maid servant,
servant, Harriet, my daughter. Don't let your spirit be troubled. Stand and deliver yourself and your people across the rivers of freedom. Dream dreams. See visions. No longer will your people be reproached among nations. I will be with you. I will turn their plowshares into wings. Lead my people out of the sea of the dead across the river of life. I will baptize and bless them in the waters of freedom. Bring my children of the sunshine out of the darkness into the light. The light of liberty, and let them bask in the envelope by the warmth of the sun. Did you hear me, Harriet? Harriet, maidservant. It was then that I knew that there was one or two things I had a right to, and that was liberty or death. If I can have one, then I'll have the other. For no man shall take me alive. I shall fight for my liberty as long as my strength lasts. The voice has spoken. What I knew was true. I had married John Tubman, a man freed by his masters, so he said. I was still a slave, though. My husband refused to join me on my rendezvous with liberty. But no matter, no matter. The voice had spoken, and it had decreed what must be so. I was bound to stand and deliver, to stand and deliver myself and my people into the bosom of freedom. My two brothers started out with me. I told them, you're going to wade the water or you're going to be a dead, and they filled in the rest. But they lost their nerve as we started on our journey and returned to the dead of slavery. Yes, they did. And I went on by myself. I wasn't afraid. I wasn't afraid at all. I knew I had been given wings. I walked through the back ways of Maryland in my worn-out shoes for days. One night, I come to a creek. I looked at the hole in my shoes, and I looked at the creek again, but they didn't matter because I knew I wore the gospel shoes. So I waded steadily against the currents across the water during the dead of the night. Too tired to continue. Oh, I was so tired. I hid myself in the mist, fiery-colored bushes that skirted the banks. When I woke, the night had woke me up. A red, orange colored sun that looked as big as the world smiled down upon me as it hovered in the east. Its rainbow colors rained down on top of me, flooding and warming my soul. Woo, my soul. My new day had just begun. And from then on, I could live by the promise of the light. Lord have mercy. I had reached Pennsylvania. I had walked west to freedom. I was free. I was free. I said, I wonder what it feels like to be free. I wish I knew how it feels to be free. I wish I could take some of these chains off of me. And I began to sing that song to myself. During my night of slavery, I had known hunger. Woo! I had known hunger, suffering, and hard work, and even abuse. When I was 14, an overseer struck me in the head with a 2-pound weight. Oh, Lord. The thing hurt me so bad. I still have seizures and dizzy spells from it now. None of that matters now. None of that matters now. Over the last 10 years, I have made 19 trips through the tunnel of darkness to deliver my people across the waters of freedom into the light of day. And I have never lost a passenger on that imaginary train called the Underground Railroad. I don't intend to lose none either. That's why I tote my pistol with me, and I told everybody, you gonna be free or you gonna die. And I told them they had to wade the water or there'd be a dead Negro. No, sirree, I told all of them, tain't no going back or turning around once we on our way. I even carried lard to make them babies sleep all during the night during our journey. I found that the best time to begin the journey was on Saturday night. That way we could get a good start before the newspaper came out on Monday morning, notifying everybody that there were fugitives on the loose. Oh, I tell you, there were certainly some hard, hard times. But I knew, because the voice had spoken to me, that there would be a way made out of no way. When I needed money for my trips, I collected pennies, nickels, and dimes, and from some folks, most black people, who supposed to support me, you know, for my cause. When I needed more funds, I hired myself out as a domestic servant to earn the money that I needed. Some of the Quakers helped in the work of the Underground Railroad also. Others of the Quakers refused to have anything to do with it. They wouldn't do anything to hurt a fugitive, but they sure wouldn't do nothing to help them either. It was against the policy of the Mother Church, they said. The Quakers said the Mother Church don't allow us to help no fugitives. This one Quaker man, Thomas Garrett, certainly did help me, though. I remember one time he brought me some new shoes. I had walked so much, I had completely worn out the boots that I was wearing. I thanked him for his gesture and went on my way into the tombs of slavery. Lord, those shoes hurt my feet so bad, it felt like my toes were talking to me. It's nothing like trying to break in a new pair of shoes. I felt like crying. Then a voice said to me, Harriet, Harriet, why are you worrying over your feet? You've got something more important to do. From that moment on, it felt like my feet got wings. I went on down and I did what I was supposed to do. Now, I have rescued my sisters, my mother, my father, and upward of 300 more. People say, Harriet, how is it you never got caught? I tell them, it's because I never ventured anywhere but where the voice told me to go. I didn't really rely on myself at all, but on the spirit of freedom. That was my guide. I led so many people out of the bondage that they start calling me Moses, Moses, lift up your hand so the people can have faith and believe. So I gained the name of Moses, so you can call me Moses. My route was usually through Delaware, Pennsylvania, and New York, but I changed up periodically just to confuse those slave catchers. Those slave catchers was bloodhounds and gifty people. They were in for it for the money. And if the slave owner said they wanted to have a fugitive dead or alive, the slave catchers just as soon kill you than take you back and leave you alive. Some of those slave catchers didn't care what they did to you, so you had to be particularly careful. Times got so hard. People's hearts got so hard. And the slave catchers got so greedy that it wasn't safe for any of my black people on the road as slaves. Slaves are free. They had long since started taking free blacks off the road and taking them south and selling them back into slavery. This happened to William Steele's brother, Peter. When Peter was only 5 years old, Peter stayed in slavery for 40 years until he could earn enough money to buy his freedom from slaveholders. He had no use for anything. He had to leave his wife and family in slavery, though, when he decided to leave. As destiny would have it, when Peter got back to Philadelphia, he was directed to a man who had chronicles and kept the chronicles, an account of all of the slaves that were free. He told the man his story, and a chill ran up and down the man's back. But the story sounds so familiar. The man was William Steele, a conductor, an organizer, station keeper, manager of the Underground Railroad line of Philadelphia, Peter's brother also. When they realized that they were brothers, they embraced each other and shed tears of joy. It was just like they were meeting for the first time. It was just too bad that their mother and their father didn't live to see the days when the kidnapped son was returned home. And it was so sad for the child to be denied the love of a mother and father and the comfort of a home. And they embraced for that night. Peter and the conductor were brothers. Like I said, it got to be where it wasn't safe for even free blacks in the so-called free states. Blacks were treated the same as, they were not treated the same as white folks. It got so bad in the cities across the North, white mobs would get together and burn blacks out, stone them or beat them, and even if they could, they wouldn't help them. And if it wasn't safe for the free blacks, you know it wasn't safe for the fugitive slaves. I thought I'd leave these people, and I would not leave my people behind. I'd take them on with me. These people couldn't stay in the United States any longer. I have to take them to Canada where they can be free, and I might as well go along with them. It seems a pretty good idea for me to stay there too. After the slave catchers got word that there was 40,000 pounds on my head, dead or alive, I just as soon go on to Canada myself. When I was in Canada, I ministered among the fugitives. I come back to the States every so often to get a fugitive up in Canada. I met John Brown, a man who led a raid on Harper's Ferry, Virginia, arsenal in 59. When John Brown introduced me around, he'd say, "Here is General Harriet Tubman, the best and the bravest general on the continent." Too soon, John Brown and his men were merited for the cause of freedom. Two black men, Dangerfield Newbley and Lewis Leary, were killed at the arsenal. Two other black men, Shiel Green, Fred Douglas Friend, and John Copeland, who led an attempt at the college on Ohio Berlin, they went to the galleons after Brown. The death of the men were like an omen of something. Soon after, this country was caught up in a rage storm. I'll tell you about that in time, so remember to ask me. What I'll say now is that it's too bad. A great calamity must befall the sea of man and force people to stand up for what is right. It's too bad the tempest must rage before men of power stand up for what is right. And prestigious will listen to that voice instead of them that tells them what is right and what is just. Take a lesson from those that fool themselves like that. Listen to the voice inside of you that tells you what is right, what is just, what is good. Then you can deliver your dreams and your vision and take charge of your destiny. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining me as I do part two of Stand and Deliver. I hope you are planning to come and see me live as I perform this outstanding speech by Harriet Tubman. Join me as I continue. Part two, Stand and Deliver. Come on up here on the porch and join me. I'm just sitting here rocking, taking a rest, trying to see which way the wind is going to blow. See, this is how we do it. You put a little spittle on your finger, and then you hold your finger up in the air to feel the wind in the midst of the calm. You got to be able to feel a storm coming on, and you got to get yourself prepared. You got to be on guard. You got to know which way the wind is blowing. I think people ought to be more like trees. Trees bend when the wind is in a storm. And when the storm is over, they stand up straight and tall and mighty again. They can bounce back from a raging wind. People ought to be like that too. Go on and sit down. I'll tell you right on as I rocked and reflect on my life. Thinking about how many storms I've contended with. Here, have you ever reflected on your life? You've got to take a look at yourself every now and then. You've got to take an account of yourself and what you've done in this life and what you've done and what you've got to get done and what is still undone and what you're going to get done in the future. It takes gumption to get things done and to stand up and survive the storm. Yes, sirree, you've got to have some gumption and some mother whip, too. I've been in many storms, but I've been like the tree. I've been with the wind, and when one storm was over, I stood up straight and tall. And I have even during the storm and sometimes weathered the storm when it was worthwhile. I weathered the storm of slavery, and the tempest was raging during the days of the Underground Railroad and the Ladder War and all that came after that. Take a late war. Let's look at that late war. The war of the rebellion of the war of the recessions that some folk call it. That was a time when it was like the four corners of the wind got loose at the same time. This one of the things I told you that I'll tell you in time. So here it is. Well, many of the people at that time never held their fingers up to feel which way the wind was blowing. Others of them knew that the storm was brewing, but fooled themselves into thinking that they could hold the wind back at bay. Even Abraham Lincoln thought he could do this. When Abraham Lincoln became president, he promised the South that he had no intentions to interfere with slavery where it existed. Well, it existed just about everywhere. They were still auctioning slaves in New York when I was carrying fugitives through the Underground Railroad line. But anyway, Lincoln's promise wasn't good enough because shortly after he became president, the recessions fired on Fort Sumter, and the symptoms of governmental authority off the course of Charleston, South Carolina, the firestorm had begun. Abolitionists all over the country challenged Lincoln to make the abolition of slavery a war aim. Free blacks all over the country begged him, and Henry Staten, the Secretary of War, let them fight, he said. I said that Mr. Lincoln had a snake in his house. He would kill it and cast it out. Slavery was like a snake, and it should be killed and cast in fire. To all this, Mr. Lincoln took a deaf ear. He said the war was to preserve the Union, not to destroy slavery. But even though the president turned a deaf ear, the floodgates of freedom burst open, and the tides of liberty rose up, and the North and the South prepared for a great battle that ended up being over war, over slavery. This tide gave life and hope to the sea of the dead as the enemies of people in the water of freedom. And even though Lincoln had told the slaveholders that they could keep their slaves, right, toughest with the hearts of some of Lincoln's general. John Freedman was one. He issued an Emancipation Proclamation. Slaves would be free in Missouri in 61. But Lincoln said that Freedman had no authority to do that and that his Emancipation Proclamation was no good. Slavery were still slaves in Missouri. Congress held its finger up and felt which way the wind was blowing. Congress knew that the wind of the spirit of freedom was whirling across the country. Congress fed slaves to Washington, D.C. over Lincoln veto in 62. And then the Union found that it could not face the wind of the spirit of freedom. It was losing battle after battle. The South was winning the war. Then finally Lincoln realized that he must bend with the wind. After the Union won a couple of battles, he issued an Emancipation Proclamation. But this proclamation freed some of those slaves and kept others in slavery. It was the great lady, Sojourner Truth, declared, got rid of slavery partway at the branch, but not at the root. Meanwhile, black folks were still begging to be able to fight for the Union. James B. Lane had organized black troops in Kansas. Davis Hunter had organized black troops in South Carolina. Fred Douglass kept saying, give black men bullets and bayonets. But Lincoln and Stanton refused. They even refused to recognize the troop that Land and Hunt had organized. Lincoln saw that the Union victory had been a lull in the storm, not a changing of the wind, and suggested arming black as a military necessity. Just think, Lincoln said, how scared the Confederates would be to see black men with guns. Are black men scary? In March of 63, Congress passed an act allowing blacks to fight. The Massachusetts 54 was the first black regiment recognized by the federal government, even though there were those united in Kansas and South Carolina after the 54 upward and 150 black regiment fought in the war. They were called USCTS, the United States Colored Troop. After they got in the spirit of freedom, blacks, and they got their freedom back to them, the Union began to bend with the wind. Black men had come out of Canada and all over the North and the South to fight for the Union. And while among other folk, brothers had turned against brothers, fathers had turned against sons, and mothers had turned against daughters, and daughters had turned against wives, and blacks were on one accord. Finally, they were riding in the wind of freedom, fighting in the war as the Massachusetts 54. I was up in Canada until 62. I had to do something. The voice spoke to me and said, Harriet, what are you going to do? I said, well, you told me to stand and deliver my people. So I'm going down there and be at the helm of the heart that will guide my people out of the debt of slavery. I told the voice that I'd go wherever I was needed, and I was needed in the South of South Carolina. I served under Colonel James Montgomery of the 2nd South Carolina Volunteers Regiment of Black Soldiers. When I got there, I took an account of the free slave. I thought these were some of the folks that folks say they shouldn't be free because they didn't know how to do for themselves. I said they did all right by the white folks. The slaves grew and cooked. They cooked for them and fed them and made their clothes and tended their needs and nursed their children. So they should be able to do something for themselves. So if they did all that for the white folks, how come they can't do something for themselves? We ought to be able to. When I got to South Carolina, some slaves in the place